This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow the Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network. And with me today is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
So last week was not only our episode 47, which admittedly is a Next Generation era reference, but it was also released on the 48th anniversary of Star Trek, and we neglected to mention either of those things, and I feel stupid.
Yeah, I was thinking about how, well, I thought about it being the 47th episode, and a long time ago I thought about it being how the anniversary was going to fall on a Monday, but I figured, oh, it's just the 48th anniversary. What's the big deal, right?
Right.
Although
it's not a huge deal. In a couple years, it'll be a big deal. We'll do that one live.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be... I have big plans for that day, but regardless. It is also the animated series anniversary on September 8th, so people never mention that.
That's very convenient that they premiered them on the same day.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think they meant to?
No. I don't think they cared at all or even realized it.
Well, it's an anniversary. Let's release it on... Well, today we're going to cover another character. Last time we covered Chekhov, and he didn't do much, so it wasn't super busy. But this episode, we'll cover Mr. Hikaru Sulu, who ends up doing more than just screaming like a girl. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Let's find out
a little
through
bit.
Our discussion. Yeah. Well, it turns out, in the original series, so we'll split it like we usually do, or like how Mike reminded me we usually do, with we'll talk about him in TOS, we'll talk about him in the movies, and we'll talk about the JJ version of him, which we should probably come up with a new name, because the Orshi JJ version.
Yeah, I can't think of anything right now. It's way too early in the morning to be clever.
New Trek. In TOS, Sulu's always in the middle of it. Like, he's never really a main character, but if something's happening, he's in the thick of it. In The Enemy Within, he's freezing to death on a planet because they forgot they had shuttlecrafts.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most interesting things to me is that in the first episode, the episode that premiered 48 years ago last week, in The Man Trap, he's a botanist. I don't know if that was his job before he was helmsman. Or if this was just like a hobby, like I'm sure that they've written it into the canon that he just dabbled in botany. But why a botanist? It just seems odd that would be like, well, we've got this actor here. Let's make him a botanist so that this hand puppet can get upset at a salt vampire. Like, how did that get written into it?
Well, I mean, but that wasn't his first job. He had a different job in Where No Man Has Gone Before. Wasn't he a physicist or something?
Astrosciences,
yeah. Because you see him standing there on the bridge with, like, his blue tunic on or something like that. And it's like, well, why? What's Sulu doing? Why don't they have him flying? But he just, you know, he was going around, trying different things, seeing what stuck. You know, he was also, there's probably, you know, like a number of positions which were available. So he was sort of working his way up. And then he eventually got the helmsman thing.
But is he a professional at all these things? I think that the canon explanation is that he's so widely varietied. Like, he's a jack of all trades. And there's just no... He finally found his passion. But he found his passion within, like, 6 months. This isn't college. He should have found this out in Starfleet Academy.
Well, it's quite possible. And if you take into account, you know, what we learn from the JJ verse, which... You would assume some things wouldn't have been changed by the new timeline. you know, he is a very good pilot, right? So I would assume...
Debatedly.
That the way that this thing worked was he wanted to be a pilot. He wanted to be a helmsman. And he was like, okay, I want to be a helmsman on the Enterprise, so I'm going to take this crappy job in astrosciences.
Whatever job is open on the Enterprise. Okay.
Right. And then move up to botany because the pay is slightly better and, you know, get to hang out with Gertrude and all that stuff. And everyone knows that Gertrude's cool. And then, you know, eventually someone died. And he's like, ooh, now's my chance. And there you go.
Yeah, I guess. I suppose you need to be where the jobs are. And, you know, if you're not getting jobs where you are, I had a coworker who just moved because his wife couldn't find a job in the area. So
yeah.
I guess you need to be where the jobs are. And if he wants a job on the Enterprise, he should be on the Enterprise. But, like, co-piloting, I can see being, you know, a step up. But, like, being science division... There's a lot of division switching. I mean, even Geordi does it in Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm the pilot. No, no, I'm the engineer. And he changes colors. And Chekhov in Into Darkness. It's like, yeah. We need you to no longer be in the command structure. You need to be in services. It's like, what? How does that work? I guess I just don't understand job positions in Starfleet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess you'd have to ask the writers. I mean, I can give you the real answer if you want it, but I think it's going to be kind of a boring one. But yeah, if we want to try to figure out some sort of convoluted in-universe explanation for it, I don't know. See, this is why you have an expanded universe, right? It's not to tell the same stories that you've been telling for years and years and years with these characters. It's to fill in gaps like this, you know? I want to see a novel which talks about Sulu's rise from Starfleet Academy up until you get to whatever that episode is where he's first a helmsman. What is it? Is it Enemy Within? I don't know. But yeah, what the episode after Mantrap or something. Corbomite Maneuver? Is he there in Corbomite Maneuver? I don't know.
No, the guest star is...
Okay, so it's been a while, or it's a little bit of a while. So, I mean, I think we need to put out the call there, you know, maybe make a plea to Chris and Matt next time they have a writer on Literary Treks or the editor of the Pocketbooks, or what is it, Pocketbooks these days?
I don't know.
Let's just say it's Pocketbooks, and then you know. Get this thing done. Let's make this happen. You know,
yeah.
I'd buy that book. I haven't read a Star Trek book since I was like 15. You know, I would totally read that book.
You know, my first thought was, well, you know, they threw out the canon, so whatever book that they wrote now would be. Oh wait, that's Star Wars. Never mind.
Yeah.
Okay. Somebody in the Star Wars universe write a book explaining how Sulu is canon in Star Wars, and then
I'd read that too.
And then JJ puts him in the new movie. There we go.
Yeah.
Wait, that? Huh?
Well, they could put him in the new movie. I mean, George Takei does play a character on Clone Wars.
Oh yeah, yeah. Which is canon.
Yeah. So.
So that's close enough for me.
Yeah.
So Sulu eventually works his way up from sciences to navigation, and which puts him on the command track. So it puts him first in command, second in command.
Wait, no, is it navigation? He's not. He's never navigator, is he?
You're the helmsman. One who's supposed to keep me straight on this.
He's a helmsman. Chekhov's the navigator. Sulu is the helmsman.
According to Memory Alpha, both the helm and navigational systems were able to access weapons and shield functions.
Yeah, because they could just, like, reach over onto the other guy's station because...
So, Chekhov and Sulu shared tactical officer. So, yes, okay. Sulu flew and Chekhov told him where to fly.
Yeah, right.
Right. Okay. I'll remember it this time.
Think about it this way. When we were driving down to Dragon Con,
yes.
I was Sulu and you were Chekhov.
Yes, that's how I'm going to remember.
And you can even remember that because of the way that they're sitting in the ship, right? Sulu's in the driver's seat.
Anyway, because he's now in the command structure and he's the helmsman, he is now fourth in command. Because we've got Kirk, Spock, Scotty, Sulu.
Yeah, he's fourth in command, unless they decide they want a guest star to be fourth in command that week.
Right. So there were a couple times in TOS where he took command. One was Errand of Mercy, where he took command while Kirk and Spock were on Organia. I'm not sure why Scotty, or even if they addressed why Scotty wasn't in command. Probably it was Jimmy Doohan's off week.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's more likely that George Takei tried to go to try to get more stuff for his character to do, which I don't blame him. Another time was Omega Glory, when everybody went down to the planet and Sulu was left in charge. He doesn't get to try to mutiny. He doesn't have people try to mutiny against him, because usually if he's in charge, it means, you know, McCoy and Scotty are in the thick of it, and they can't try to take over the ship from him like they did to poor Spock.
Well, also, he's a good commander. I mean, as we'll see later on, he gets his own ship and everything like that, and I think, you know, one of the reasons is because everyone likes him. They're like, oh yeah, this guy's great. We've never had to mutiny when this guy was in command.
Sulu seems like a fun-loving guy. He's got all those different interests. When he gets drunk, he picks up a sword and runs around with his shirt off.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else just paints on the walls or walks around the corridors weeping. He's just like, I'm going to have a good time. Yeah. I feel like it's really cool that he has this command ability, but he also has this ability to have a good time. I feel like he'd be a really cool captain.
Yeah, you see him hanging out with people a lot more than some of the other characters too. You like, there would be a lot of, and I'm sure this was part of the reason for that is because they wanted to show numerous times, you know, the general camaraderie among the lower decks, you know, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was one of their token lower deck guys. You know, this is back before everyone was a commander on like Next Gen or even in the movies. You know, I think that was kind of partially the role of these supporting characters, was to show general crew members. And, you know, you do see him, like, hanging out with people, you know, and you don't see that too often. I mean, there's a few times here and there. Trouble with Tribbles, of course, where you see Chekov and Uhura, you know, going to the bar and stuff like that. But that was one of the things which I always thought was cool, was, like, seeing Sulu off duty.
Yeah, especially during, like, shore leave, he's got a lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
He summons a gun, and he summons a samurai. I mean, he's just all over the place.
Yeah.
Another cool thing about Sulu in the original series, before we move on to the movies, I think, is that casting, like we talked about with Chekhov, it was really a big deal to have Chekhov there, have a Russian on the bridge, because we were at Cold War with the Russians. And it's good having a Japanese actor on the bridge, because we just, within the last 18 years, I think, is when World War II had ended. And I feel like there was,
at that point, I guess.
Okay. 20 years. There, I feel like there was still a lot of people still harboring resentment. I mean, then look what we did. I mean, George Takei himself spent time in an internment camp during World War II. So I feel like a lot of these wounds would still be fresh, and it was probably very reassuring to see, this multinational bridge with people that we don't care for now and people that we didn't care for 20 years ago, all of them working together. So I think that's a big deal. I think that's something that might be overlooked.
Yeah,
in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of having an Asian character on the bridge, I think, was sort of a must have, you know. I mean, when you think about the idea of making it very multicultural, and there being, you know, an African character, and you know, it is kind of weird when you think about, you know, some of the ethnicities which were excluded. Like, there are no Hispanic characters, like, ever in the history of Star Trek, which is kind of weird. And, you know, there's no Native American character, but Asia makes up such a large part of the world that you would have to have that. Mm-hmm. And the idea of going specifically with a Japanese character, I think, is, you know, really cool, and I'm sure very, very intentional on Roddenberry's part.
So in the movies, we finally see Sulu after the first few movies. Of course, the first few movies are, you know, rough and tumble. In the first movie, everybody, the gang's all back together. In the second movie, they're just all on the ship for a training cruise for some reason. So he pilots because the kids can't.
Yeah, but, I mean, we should talk about Star Trek too, because it is rather significant in terms of what Sulu doesn't do. You know, I mean, to me, it's very clear that Chekhov's role should have been Sulu's. You know, if you think about it logically, it just makes sense. You know, Sulu was the one who was there in season one when mm-hmm. Space Seed was occurring. Sulu is the one who would logically be the commander, you know, or on that path, you know, be a first officer, especially knowing what came later. You know, not that they knew that. But, you know, I mean, Sulu was definitely ahead of Chekhov in terms of the command structure and everything. And it just makes sense for Sulu to be in that role. And he probably would have been in that role if they had caught it. But, you know, I think like we were saying on our Chekhov episode that the person who they gave the script to catch it was Walter Koenig. And he was like, oh, everything's good here. I'm liking this script a lot.
There's nothing wrong here. So you got to think poor Sulu. I doubt that Sulu and Kirk had the relationship that Takei and Shatner had. But I imagine that if Sulu was the Chekhov role in Star Trek II, imagine like finally I'm away from Captain Kirk and I can prove myself. I'm first officer on this ship, and this Terrell guy, he's all right, but you know, I can do this, and I can be a good officer. And then he gets captured and, you know, brainwashed, and then, you know, saved by, of course, Kirk.
Yeah.
Like, no, let me go out on my own. Apparently, in the novelizations from both Star Trek II and III, Sulu was supposed to become the commander of the Excelsior.
It's definitely in 4, because I've read 4, and they talk about that. I'm like, really? They knew that? Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, in 2 and 3, Memory Alpha says that he was supposed to be given command of the Excelsior, but after the Genesis incident, they decided to give command of the Excelsior to Stiles.
That's interesting that they even mentioned the Excelsior in the novelization of 2.
Yeah, that's crazy. You've got to check that out.
Yeah.
This sounds very interesting. I'm sure I can find it at my used bookstore that has all the old Star Trek books. I think my favorite, like, Sulu moments are Star Trek III. Just him, like, the whole don't call me tiny thing.
Yeah.
I think is just great.
Yeah, you know, when I was growing up, you know, you know, people would be like, what's your favorite character? And, you know, you can't say Kirk or Spock because, I mean, that's what everyone says, right? You know?
Right.
So I was always like, well, my favorite character is Sulu.
And really?
I think one of the big reasons for that was that stuff in Star Trek III. And then I think probably Star Trek VI as well. But, yeah, the stuff in Star Trek III is great. You know, that scene, don't call me tiny.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I cheer every time. I can't imagine being in theaters and seeing that.
Yeah, yeah.
But in Star Trek IV, he gets to fly a helicopter.
Mm-hmm. And there was like a whole subplot cut out where like he goes to, I forget, because there's like a large, I'm guessing there's a large Japanese population in San Francisco, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, so. Like, San Francisco, I was born there, you know? There's, like, a whole thing where, like, he goes and meets his...
Yeah, like, he runs into a kid who, you know, he talks to for a minute, and then somebody yells, you know, blah, 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 Sulu, get back here. And he's like, oh, my God, that was my grandfather.
Yeah, yeah.
But the kid didn't behave. He was too nervous, and so they had to... They didn't even get to film any of it, so it's not, like, something we can get on the Blu-ray that's not, you know... Washed out to hell.
They should have talked to Terry Gilliam, and he would have told them, you know, like, you gotta have a backup, right? For when you're...
What?
No? Oh, you haven't seen that?
No.
In 12 Monkeys, there's the whole thing where, like, the little kid who plays little Bruce Willis at the end, like, he does this whole thing. And, like, the movie ends with, like, it starts and ends with a shot of his eyes, essentially, right?
So, okay, cool.
So they were like, we got this guy. He's really good. And Gilliam's like, you know, this is really important. How about we also hire our second choice and just have him on set just in case our first choice doesn't work out? And really? Sure enough, like, if you watch the documentary, they're like, this is not working. And they're like, okay, bring in the other kid, you know? And then they do, and then they're like, yes, that worked. Brilliant. Masterpiece. And I always feel bad for that other kid.
But, yeah, that you do feel bad for him.
But what can you
kind of like how I feel bad in the episode one, the Star Wars episode one stuff. You feel bad for the kids who are actually better actors than Jake Lloyd.
Yes, yes.
And you're like, what in the hell are you? And that's neither here nor there. Yeah. But in Star Trek V, for some reason, Sulu still doesn't have a command of his own. And I don't think there's any explanation except that it was Star Trek V and Shatner wanted everybody where they were.
But you also have to keep in mind that it is kind of strange that even if they had this idea behind the scenes, they're like, we're going to give him the Excelsior, we're going to do this. You know, there was no indication in the movies that that's what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from, like, in Star Trek 4 or whatever, where he's like, I'm hoping for Excelsior. And,
right.
You know, Scotty's like, why would you want that bucket of bolts or whatever? So, I mean, you know, you kind of got to think about it. Like, after you abandon that idea in each movie, then it's gone. You know, it essentially never existed. And the fact that they kept on coming back to it is strange. So, but as far as Star Trek V is concerned, you know, it's like, okay, it's not there. It's not in the movies. Let's, you know, keep the band together, you know.
But then Star Trek VI begins with Sulu in command of the Excelsior. Just no ceremony, nothing. Just, which I think, now that I think about it, a lot of the criticisms that I've been hearing about, like, the Next Generation movies is that they always find an excuse to bring Worf back from Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, Worf, you're here. Good. Shoot the weapons. Like, that's, you know, let's dare to not have Worf. Let's let them split the party. But here in Star Trek VI, they do that. You know, no ceremony, nothing. Just, you know, Sulu's over here now. Just get used to it.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to be in the movie just as often as he was before. He's just going to be over here helping out in a different way.
Yeah. That's kind of awesome.
I don't know how they could have done that with Deep Space Nine, but it's
like, I mean, you know,
Worf, we're fighting these aliens in this nebula thing. You should send Deep Space Nine to help. It's like, I'll move the station.
Someday I'll explain my alternate history of the 24th century and what I would have done in regards to First Contact and Voyager. And it is kind of all tied into that. But, you know, that I guess that's for another show. Maybe one day we can do a huge crossover event, you know?
With every show where we can talk about anything?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because it does span everything. It would bring the universe together and it would be so much cooler. And of course they weren't going to do that, but whatever.
Of course not. So Sulu's in command of the Excelsior. He gets to help solve the Klingon assassination issues. He gets to break his own, you know, direct orders, and he gets to play captain, which is fantastic. He's also in Voyager in that same role.
Oh, wait. Let's go back to Star Trek.
Well, that's in the middle. We're not moving from Star Trek VI. We're just in the middle of Star Trek VI.
I guess you could look at it like that.
Okay. It takes place in the middle when they're headed toward the Klingon neutral zone.
I guess so. Okay. All right. Okay. Yes. Yes. Continue.
He gets to meet Janeway and Tuvok.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's so all he does say. That thing.
There's really not much else.
Okay, so yes, there's not much else to say about that one. But Star Trek VI, I mean, this is like Sulu, you know, full throttle. Like this is Sulu to the max. He's so awesome in this movie. And, you know, I mean, it starts off with him, there's like an explosion, then there's him drinking tea, and then like the ship gets hit by the wave, and then like he is just like on point in this movie. You know, he's so good. He's like the best commander ever, aside from like maybe Kirk, you know? And seeing him in that Excelsior and making that ship work and everything like that, oh my God. He's so amazing. There was a convention that I went to when I was like a little kid, and I brought my Star Trek VI Laserdisc because I knew that George Takei was going to be there. And I go up to him, I'm like, could you sign this? And he's like, sure. And he's like, I like to call this movie Star Trek VI, Sulu to the Rescue. And I'm like, that's awesome because it's so true.
Now all I can do is imagine, like you call Into Darkness with the number 2. It's like Sulu 2, The Rescue.
Yes, yes. He's the best. He's awesome in that movie.
I'm glad that you got that signed by Takei. That's kind of awesome.
There's like so many things in there. Like there's the scene where like Christian Slater comes in, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, just so you know, this thing. And he's like, what's your problem? You know, and then there's like the whole thing where they're like, we'll fly her apart, sir. And he's like, well, then fly her apart. Fly her apart then. That's what it was. Sorry. Oh, my God. It's awesome. Are you kidding? I mean, he's just like, it's like
he
this
may
total
have the best lines in Star Trek VI.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. And they quote Shakespeare like nonstop in that movie. And his lines are still better than that. I mean, he's so good. It's like a complete transformation for that character, but in like a completely logical way. You know, it's not just like what you see sometimes in Star Trek where it's like, oh, this is the same character. Like Spock going from the cage to where no man has gone before. It's like, this is the same character, but he's acting completely differently. It's like, it is a logical progression, but it's like now Sulu, he's got his own ship and he's like, now I can do things the way that I want to do them. And I'm going to do them awesome because that's me. You know? Oh, God. Yes.
I can see why people started pushing for a Sulu in Command series back in this time.
Yeah, and he was all for it, too. I had said that back in the day, too. You know, back before I had heard it anywhere, I was like, they should do this. And now? Well, we'll get to that. But anyway.
So now we get to the alternate universe, JJ verse, Orshi verse. New Trek, the mirror universe of not really mirrored, it's more of a window universe. How about that?
That works. Two-way mirror universe. There you go.
Ooh.
All right.
I think
we just hacked that Gibson.
So in the new movies, we'll leave it like that. In the new movies, Sulu is a young upstart kid. He's Cho's Korean, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Yes, in this one, he's only on the Enterprise because somebody else is sick, and he forgets to take the parking brake off.
Yeah.
But he doesn't get to... Chekov gets to run and say, I can do that. Sulu does get to do some cool base jumping.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
sword fighting.
Yeah, he gets to pull out his own sword, his own retractable sword. Do you have a problem with this? Like, I have a problem with this. You probably don't. I just think it's odd that, you know, you can just have these on your away mission. Like, oh, you know, I might need a sword. In the novelization of Star Trek, he actually grabs a sword from another Klingon.
Oh.
Or from a Romulan, sorry. He grabs a sword from a Romulan and uses it. And then... you know, Kirk looks at him like a crazy person. He's like, oh, you know, I took fencing.
I guess so. I mean, I guess that makes sense. But when he's like, who has hand-to-hand combat or whatever? Mm-hmm. I mean, the question is like, well, what is it? And he's like, fencing.
Why would they assume there'd be hand-to-hand combat? Why do they assume there'd be...
I guess that is a question right there, yeah. Why would you assume there'd be hand-to-hand?
Wouldn't you need that for every away mission?
Yeah, that's true.
So what does he do in Into Darkness?
Well, Into Darkness, he does a really big thing, which to me could change, or not change, but signal the trajectory of the JJ verse for years to come. Okay? He takes command in one of the most amazing shots I've ever seen, okay? Where they're like, Sulu, you're in command now. And then there's that cut to him. And like, and here's a case where you see like lens flares, and they do work perfectly well, and actually add to the story and add to this moment where like the camera just makes this slow movement. I think it might be like a dolly in, I'm not positive. And the look on his face, and all credit to John Cho for that look, is just like, it's like a combination of like panic and then also like, oh my God, like this is happening. Like this is like the, and there's a little flare like right behind his head. And it's like this moment where like everything is sort of coalescing, and you're like, we are seeing the moment where this character's life is changing.
It's, you know, like the light bulb above his head, but it's a lens flare from the side.
Right, exactly. And it's like, holy shit, he's taking command, you know? And then he's like, I've never done this before. I'm freaking out. And then he just steps up and he does it, you know, and he nails it. And you even got like Bones, who's like, Mr. Sulu, remind me never to play cards with you or whatever, you know? And there's whole thing, right? And they make a big deal out of it. And part of it, I think, is a nod to the fans. But another part of it, I think, is, look, you got John Cho, right? He's established. He's also starring in some sort of crazy comedy with Karen Gillan right now on TV. Mm-hmm. Prior to this, he was doing Sleepy Hollow with Kurtzman and Orsi and everything like that. Prior to that, he was doing a show with Brannon Braga. He has no problem doing weekly episodic television. Now, if we're going to do a television show, it would only make sense to set it in the two-way mirror universe, and it would only make sense for it to be off of the Enterprise, and it would only make sense for you to tie it in by perhaps bringing in a character from the Enterprise. So, Star Trek Excelsior coming to a television screen near you, September 2016, starring John Cho as Captain Hikaru Sulu?
Why not?
There's absolutely no reason why not. In fact, if they don't do it, I'm going to be mad. I don't care what the idea they come up with is. If it's not that, I'm going to be mad. Because that sounds like the best show ever. Am I wrong?
No, I think it sounds great. I love Cho.
And you love Sulu.
Yeah.
And the Excelsior.
Yeah, I'd like to see what the JJ Excelsior would look like.
I want to see that too. I imagine it would be cool. Because
maybe
like
it would look
Excelsior.
Like the regular Excelsior. Maybe they get back to the original designs.
I don't think I've seen those.
No, I mean, Excelsior.
You mean like in the movie? Gotcha, yeah.
From the non two-way mirror universe.
I'm sure it would definitely be based on that, you know? That'd be cool. I know there are people who hate the Excelsior design.
I don't get that.
I like it.
I like it too.
I like it a lot. They got the toys now. My big debate has been, do I get the Excelsior or the B?
Well, it depends on if you're collecting Enterprises. If you're only collecting Enterprises, like I think I would have to get the B.
See, my wife collects Enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about that. So I'm thinking I should get the Excelsior.
Yes. If you're going to have both in your household, you already have the excuse to not get the B.
Yeah. All right.
With its little flares and stuff. I don't know. And we would be remiss if we didn't mention Demora Sulu apparently he found time to have a kid who would be grown up and the helmsman on the Enterprise B.
Well, you know what they say. If something's important, you make the time.
Yes. Don't quote regulations at me. Well, it's fun talking about Sulu today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And, like, we were so busy, we didn't eat, like, all day. I had a Red Bull around 5 o'clock, right before the parsecs. I could feel my teeth, like, tingling.
Yeah, yeah.
It was weird.
Earl Grey.
He was robbing the bokeh. As they say it in Klingon, as a Klingon word I just made up, just so you know.
I think we can tell.
The orb.
What I also liked, too, was that Nog said, put that in there, too, to Jake, and let people decide. And that just summed up DS9 for me, because DS9 is, you know, we're not going to tell you for sure he's a bad captain, even though, obviously, I think most people would agree that he was.
To the journey!
Oh, yeah, B'Elanna's reading romantic fanfic.
Not everything is fanfic, okay? This
yes,
could
it
be
is.
A legitimate author with a legitimate publisher.
No, this is Klingon Harlequin. You know it is.
Warp 5.
The Orions, there's something really complex going on within their society, and there's a long-term struggle where the women have flipped the table on the men. And how does that all play out? And it's something where I wish Enterprise had gone for 7 seasons and they could have continued to revisit this and we'd find out more and more.
The Ready Room.
You know, people have seen that image. That image in particular, just that still of her with the Desilu logo over it, is really iconic. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what I discovered is it's not a still. It's probably 26 different stills.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
A number of scenes from especially the end of Into Darkness are sort of lifted and adapted from Wrath of Khan to be used in this story.
Lifted and Google translated into this version.
Literary Treks.
We all know Troy gets all the men that come on, the all the envoys, actually. You notice that she really likes these bad boy envoy men, you know?
She does.
Continuing mission.
How is Spock changing? How is he changed from the moment he met Captain Kirk from the non-mirror universe? What is his ultimate goal?
Axanar, the official podcast.
So basically you've got this souped up computer with this lens on the front of it. And because the resolution has increased so much with these cameras, the amount of data coming out of that camera is enormous.
And join us in welcoming aboard Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
I'm really, really glad that you mentioned Parliament Funkadelic. I could not watch this at all without thinking about George Clinton.
Yeah, every time he talks about going to Parliament, I'm like,
I wouldn't want to go.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream from the website. Just visit Trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. Well, if you want to contact us and share your thoughts on today's show or any of our other shows, just go to Trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab on the left-hand column of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
You can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary Trek Stars with Max. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DUBLEOFIVE, and various other places around the internet under that same name. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week, and our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everyone?
Well, you know, they've got a number of Captain Sulu adventures on Audible.com. I'm really not sure which one to go with, so I'll just mention all three. There's Star Trek Cacophony, Star Trek Envoy, and Star Trek Transformations. I don't really know which one comes first. But it seems like the best reviewed of these is Transformations. It was written by Dave Stern. It's narrated by George Takei, along with Dana Ivey. It's only an hour and 13 minutes long, but the description says, Stardate 11611.8. As Starfleet diplomat Captain Hikaru Sulu speeds alone across the galaxy in his state-of-the-art shuttlecraft, he is abducted by powerful, frightening dreams. What? That return him to the once desolate desert world of Sigma Cameron IV. It was here, as the commander of the USS Excelsior 20 years earlier, that he discovered traces of the ancient Shalakai, a ruthless culture who, legend held, had once uncovered the secret to eternal life. Driven to find that secret, Sulu's brilliant science officer, Commander Flynn Connor, launched a fateful mission whose outcome would forever haunt the Excelsior crew. Now, as the distinguished archaeologist Dr. Constance Alienwood... Oh, sorry, that's Allenwood. Let's go with Alienwood. It sounds better. Dr. Constance Alienwood moves closer to uncovering the Shalakai's secrets on Sigma Cameron 4. Sulu must race to stop her before she unleashes a disastrous chain of events. And you can get this for free on Audible since you listen to Trek FM.
That's right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And there's another way that you can support the network directly, and that's through Patreon. And so you can go to patreon.com/trekfm, and you can pledge to donate to the network directly. Your donations support the ongoing cost of bandwidth and file uploading that it takes for us to bring the network to you each week. So you can donate, and you can get all kinds of neat rewards like exclusive backgrounds for your computer, the ability to have us mention your name every episode if you choose to produce Standard Orbit, which we'd appreciate. That'd be really cool. And there's all kinds of other things as well. So take a look at that. That's patreon.com/trekfm. Well, Mike, another character down. You know, we do keep finding interesting things to say about these tertiary characters, but we're going to get to the point where... Well, we had a Janus Rand episode, and she was in 6 episodes. So, I mean, we can do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we can try.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landry.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.